Welcome to Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
And we are recording this, I don't know. We're close to the end of the Game of Thrones TV series.
Yes.
Original series on HBO.
Yes.
So we're really close to the end, and some things may happen between now and when this is released.
Yes.
But we're going to try to, we may come back and re-record some stuff, but
we might add to this.
As I'm watching Game of Thrones, one of the things that is really impressive to me is the world building that George R.R. Martin did. And one of the elements that is almost as robust as the rest of the world is the religions.
In the world.
Yeah. So religions have evolved over time.
Mm-hmm.
If you think of just some of the mythos around Greek and Roman mythology and Norse mythology,
right,
Celtic practices, African spirituality,
mm-hmm,
these stories of these gods grow, and the deeds grow, and the practices are implemented and sometimes debated, sometimes warred about, and
mm-hmm,
people die.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a process to get to a final, or at least in this lifetime, product that we are aware of. It's amazing that George R.R. Martin did that for multiple religions
in one world.
So I just thought that it deserved a little bit of attention to go through and just talk through the religions of Westeros.
Yes.
And so please forgive me, book readers, because I haven't read all the books. I've only read some of the books, but
I haven't read any.
We are researchers on this show. We do our job. So I may be off on a couple things. Y'all can get at me
right
in the comments.
Please leave comments. Yeah. Give us some feedback. But we're excited because we're fans of the show.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah,
it's doing what it's doing right now. But just the world that he's built, I have a tremendous respect for it.
Okay.
Okay. So let's talk about Westeros. A lot of times we hear them say things like they pray to the old gods and the new.
Yes.
Okay. So the old gods are the oldest gods in Westeros. Now, before any of the other people were there,
okay, they
were children of the forest.
Yes.
And the children of the forest worshipped the old gods. They didn't call them the old gods then. They just called them the gods. So they had more of a nature-based religion.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that was important to them as the children of the forest were these weirwood trees. Now, we see the weirwood trees in Winterfell. So anyway, House Stark.
Yes.
But that's the big tree with the face on it, with the blood, the leaves that bleed,
mm-hmm,
when you break them, and sometimes the tree cries and things like that. So anyway, the old gods, these were the gods in the north, and it was just the children of the forest.
Right.
And eventually, the first men came, and they interacted, and they warred for centuries. So a lot of people died. Then they had a truce.
Mm-hmm.
And they lived together without fighting until the Andals, the people from the east, where Essos is. The east is where the Dothraki are, Braavos, Essos, Meereen is there, Volantis, where the Valyrian steel is made. All that's on the east landmass in Westeros.
Mm-hmm.
The Andals came and they fought against the Children of the Forest and the First Men. They had to band together to fight the Andals.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now what happens during all this conflict is the gods are starting to mix, but just like in
real life,
in real history,
yeah.
Like now we think about our gods like, this is my god. It's almost like Bloods and Crips. Like, this is mine, and I'm not dealing with yours.
Right.
But the way it used to work is
we would absorb some of your practices.
So if, let's say, you conquered my land,
you
would still honor my gods because it's a way to get the people on your side,
mm-hmm,
and to unite kingdoms that were not united.
It's a way to expand culture.
So that's how gods grew,
mm-hmm,
and evolved, and that's why some gods look like other gods,
mm-hmm,
because that's what used to happen.
So here's an example between like Greek gods, Greek mythology, and Roman gods. So you had Greek gods who, as there was more traffic in the Mediterranean region, and as there were more wars to conquer for more land.
Mm-hmm.
This is prior to us. It's prior to the establishment of certain nation states, which eventually become,
mm-hmm,
Greece and Italy and other nations. You had people mimicking the gods of the Parthenon.
Mm-hmm.
So you have now where you can look at Roman mythology and Greek mythology and see like a Minerva versus an Athena. It's the same god, but as the information was moving across the land and through the people, they made it make sense for them.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. So the old gods, they give gifts. That's most of these gods do give gifts. And so we'll try to talk through the ones that do. For the old gods, the gifts that they give are these abilities. One is called green seeing. Green seeing is when you can basically project yourself into the past and in some cases the future. But you're just walking through the
past. You can't change anything.
You can't touch anything. Okay. You can't affect anything. Warging is another gift.
That's when Bran's eyes go white.
Right. So when Bran goes into another animal to see what they see, or in some cases another human, he's warging. The other thing when he's going back to look at, oh, we have spoilers in this show. This is Lada. Because we're spoiling anything all the way up until episode
four.
Season 8, episode 4 is when we're recording. So another episode will have dropped by then.
Yeah. But it's really hard to spoil this show because it's awesome. So if you haven't ever really watched it,
you wouldn't be listening to this episode. So
you'd be over it.
But people get mad about spoilers. I'm like, nah. Yeah. It's like watching the Super Bowl. Everyone's doing it together. If I chose the years I chose not to watch the Super Bowl, I wasn't mad. Like, man, y'all make me sick with all these scores and updates. I chose not to watch it. Just shut up and let it happen.
Right. Let people enjoy things.
And then visions is another gift that the old gods give to their followers. All right. The next and largest religion in Westeros is the Faith of the Seven.
Yes. So it's one god with seven faces. There is the father, who is represented with a male face, representing justice. The mother, with a female face, representing love and mercy. The warrior, represented as a male, with strength and victory in battle.
In the name of the warrior, I charge you to be brave. In the name of the father, I charge you to be just. In the name of the mother, I charge you to defend the innocent. Arise, Brienne of Tarth, a knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
The maiden, female, purity. The smith, who was represented as male, was for laborers and craftsmen. The crone, represented as female, was for wisdom. And the stranger, whose gender is unknown, is the avatar of death.
So there's a split there. So you got three male, three female, and then one unknown.
Unknown.
Which is a stranger. The Faith of the Seven is the religion in Westeros.
Okay.
For the most, I mean, there's some other groups, but for the larger landmass where you have House Arryn, House Tully, House Lannister, House Tyrell, all of those, that's Faith of the Seven.
Okay.
And you see this in the show. The reason why we're doing the show is because adding the religion element to the show makes the show richer, at least for me.
And it was important in various seasons, because I was just saying that I don't think I was watching it with the lens of what are the religions doing. I was more so looking at the different families almost as tribes, if you will, and they're warring for this ultimate goal, or willing to war with each other, or having to strategize with one another to get to this ultimate goal. But when you go back and you look at how the religion was important in bringing about certain actions, the persecution that was shown is reminiscent of some things that we've heard associated with various religions, but to see it represented yet not call it, I mean, this is a fantasy world.
Yeah.
So the things that were built here were built to fit a fantasy world, but they might actually look like some things that we're familiar with in this realm.
If you want to think about a religion and make a correlation, then the Faith of the Seven is more like Catholicism. And they actually have something like a Vatican, which is the high sept, which is the building right next to the Red Keep in King's Landing. And that's where the High Sparrow was and all of his followers were. He was the leader of that particular faith. All right. So for the Faith of the Seven, they have this seven-pointed star that's their symbol. And that's why they were carving that in people's heads. Mm. And it was on the floor of the high sept when they were doing the wedding.
Okay.
The trial.
Mm-hmm.
So that they used to carve that in their bodies to show that they were followers and things like that. These are like, when they're carving, they're really extremist followers. Like, they're really zealot.
Right.
Believers. All right. So the interesting thing about the Faith of the Seven, and you talked about families. Remember that old gods, they are in the north.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so anything from the north through Winterfell up to the wall is the old gods.
Yes.
That's where the godswood is, where all the weirwood trees are. All of those trees are north and north of the wall.
Okay.
Right below that, and I wish you had a map, but right below that is House Tully and House Arryn. Now, House Tully is where Catelyn Stark was from, or Catelyn Stark. She was a follower of the Faith of the Seven, where Ned Stark was a follower of the old gods.
Yep.
So they had both, like their family was mixed.
It's
and so that's
interreligious
why,
marriage.
Yeah, so they have a sept in Winterfell for her, and then they have the Godswood in Winterfell
for him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so they go between both. This is not like it's just mine and that's it, but they kind of respected both traditions. All right, there's a lot of people in this Faith of the Seven, so it's not just the High Sparrow. He's like the Westboro Baptist Church of that faith. But there's other people. There's Brother Ray, who was played by this guy named Ian McShane. Great actor. Remember, he was like in the woods and they were building this commune and erecting stuff. And this is where the Hound had his change.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so he had one of those, Brother Ray had one of those seven-pointed stars. He wore his as a medallion.
Right.
Well, there's plenty of pious sons of bitches who think they know the word of God or gods. I don't. I don't even know their real names. Maybe it is the Seven, or maybe it's the old gods, or maybe it's the Lord of Light, or maybe they're all the same fucking thing. I don't know. What matters, I believe, is that there's something greater than us.
That's the other side of that religion. So if you think of the kind of out there side, which is the High Sparrow,
right.
And then the other side is just like, we should be a community.
What does that sound like?
So, yeah. So the Faith of the Seven is a little bit diverse in what they do. The next one that's really prominent is the followers of Rahilor. And that is the Lord of the Light.
Yes.
All right. So we know that that's Melisandre and Beric Dondarrion with the eye patch and Thoros of Myr and all of these other people in the show. I really sound nerdy, but this is like,
it's awesome though. It's awesome.
It's fascinating to me. So the Lord of the Light is the religion on the Eastern continent. It's a dominant religion in Essos, which is the east side.
So the east side is the same place where the Andals came from.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Now the Lord of the Light is not necessarily monotheistic. It's just because they, you know, the other ones have God. So that's the other thing about the Faith of the Seven. It's still one God.
It just has seven different iterations.
Yeah, seven persons.
Mm-hmm.
So your Trinitarians can understand what that kind of looks like.
Yep.
And then the old gods are multiple gods. That's more
like a pantheon.
Yeah. So the Lord of the Light, there's two gods. There's two equally opposite gods.
Okay.
So it's Rahilor, the Lord of the Light, and then there's the Great Other.
Which is darkness.
Right. This God is as powerful as the Lord of the Light, and they're always at war. And so the followers of the Lord of the Light like the fire, because the fire beats back the darkness.
Right.
And so that's why they say things like, the night is dark and full of terrors.
Mm-hmm.
Because when darkness or the Great Other takes over, then there's no light. And so they always want the light there. It's a religion of fire and blood, which is also the words of House Targaryen.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of interplay here about really impressive to me that he did this. All right. So what's been believed in the show, and this, I'm not just doing like a religion lesson here. I'm trying to relate it to what happens in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully you want to go back and watch again. But the Lord of the Light, the followers believe that the Great Other were the White Walkers.
Right, and the Night King.
And the Night King, right. So that was the force that had come, because before, many centuries ago, thousands of years, actually, there was a similar event where there was a big battle between the Lord of the Light's followers and the Great Other. And the champion was this guy named Azor Ahai. And Azor Ahai had this sword and he vanquished the Great Other and they won and all that stuff. So people are looking for the return of Azor Ahai now.
The prince that was promised.
So that's the thing about Game of Thrones nerds.
Okay.
They don't agree. Some say it's the same person. Some say it's two different things. Some say that the Azor Ahai is the reappearing of that champion. And then the prince that was promised is the one that carries Lightbringer and takes out the Great Other. Is Lightbringer's a good Lord, I sound nerdy. This is
what? No, you don't.
All right, so Lightbringer is this sword that prince who was promised carries. It's okay. Like a flaming lit sword.
Mm-hmm.
This happened in season 2, episode 1. So Melisandre, who is priestess of the Lord of the Light,
right, and also a confidant of Daenerys.
No, at this time it was Stannis Baratheon.
Oh, okay.
So Stannis Baratheon is amassing his army to go take the Iron Throne because after King Robert dies, they're saying we have claims to this. So his brother Stannis is like, no, it's me.
I should be the rightful heir to the throne.
So he's going there, but Melisandre is Lord of the Light is saying, no, you need the Lord of the Light on your side. Now, Stannis is following in the faith of the Seven. So she's trying to convert him. And so in season 2, episode 1, they're on a beach. He has these relics or these statues of 7 figures representing the persons in the faith
of
the
Seven. An altar?
Right. So he has them and he burns them. And that represents him denouncing the faith of the Seven.
For the night is dark and full of terrors.
The night is dark and full of terrors.
After the long summer, darkness will fall heavy on the world. Stars will bleed.
We need to stop her.
The cold breath of winter will freeze the seas.
Not now.
And the dead shall rise in the north. In the ancient books, it's written that a warrior will draw a burning sword from the fire. And that sword shall be Lightbringer. Stannis Baratheon, warrior of light. Your sword awaits you.
And then out of one of them, he pulls a flaming sword, which they believe is Lightbringer, and they bow to him as the prince who was promised because that's what she thought he was. So this is a religious move to get the Lord on his side to go take the Iron Throne back, and she converts him to her faith.
Okay. The more you describe the intricacies of it, I'm seeing where the inspiration could definitely be rooted in not only just religion, but also the architecture of how our religions work.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things George R.R. Martin did when he was creating this, he pulled from different religious ideas from different traditions, and he was able to cobble something together with his own ideas and make the, and this is fantasy. This is what you can do. And
the
detail
world.
is just
amazing. I'm sorry.
So the gifts that the Lord of the Light gives his followers are
prophecy.
Right. Prophecy and resurrection. So they can resurrect people, which is why Melisandre could resurrect Jon Snow.
Yes.
It's also why Thoros of Myr, who was part of that brotherhood, he could keep resurrecting Beric Dondarrion. So Beric was the guy with the eye patch and he had the flaming sword towards the end of the series.
Mm-hmm.
He had been resurrected. I don't want to get the number wrong.
A
lot of times he kept coming back. And the person who kept bringing him back was Thoros of Myr. Now, Thoros was Robert Baratheon's drinking buddy. He used to be a priest of the Lord of the Light, but he started drinking too much and just ended up not doing it. But he still was a follower. So he was the one that was always resurrecting Beric.
Mm.
So that's just how the gifts work. And that's why Barrett kept coming back to life, because the Lord of the Life, Lord of the Light gave that gift to his follower. Next god, the drowned god.
Okay.
You want to tell us about the drowned god?
So the drowned god is the god of the Iron Islands, which is where House Greyjoy,
yep.
is located. Okay. He's the merciless god of the sea. Their paradise, or their heaven, is in the sea, so they are never afraid of drowning or dying at sea. When they died, the drowned god needed an oarsman, so what is dead may never die. And they have a strong navy. This is the navy that Euron Greyjoy brings to Cersei. So that's where we are right now. She has established this alliance with him so that she can use that navy in her ultimate battle.
Right. So the Iron Islands are on the west coast of the map. It's an island to the west of House Lannister and House Tully.
Mm-hmm.
Theon Greyjoy went to go live in the north in Winterfell with the Starks. And so when he got back, his father thought that he had been converted to the Faith of the Seven or the Old Gods.
Yes.
So when Theon got back, he had to prove himself by being baptized again.
Theon of the House Greyjoy, you would this day consecrate your faith to the drowned god.
I would.
Kneel. Let Theon, your servant, be born again from the sea as you were. Bless him with salt. Bless him with stone. Bless him with steel.
What is dead may never die.
What is dead may never die. But rises again, harder and stronger. Stand.
And so what the followers of the drowned god do, they baptize you and hold you underwater. And if you die, the drowned god needed a strong oarsman. If you live, I mean, they really hold you under for a long time. If you live, then you're a follower. What is dead may never die. And so now you're into that religion. So theirs is through baptism.
Hmm. What does that sound like?
Yeah. So no gifts that I know of from the drowned god, but just know that, like you said, the reason why they're most comfortable at sea, because if they die at sea, they're closer to heaven and they'll just descend to heaven, which is interesting. Last god is
my favorite.
All right, go ahead.
The many-faced god. So this was like my favorite season of this show. The many-faced god was the one who took Arya through her training as an assassin.
Yeah, so the followers was Jockin from the city of Braavos.
Mm-hmm.
They trained at the House of Black and White in Braavos, which is on the west, on the Essos continent.
On the east.
So, like, if you think about Africa, Ivory Coast is like in that type of position.
Okay. He's a Braavosi god. He's also the god of death. And I'm saying he. Is that proper?
The many-faced god is no.
Has no.
No.
Okay. So it. is the god of death and the gifts that it bestows. The gift of death. Look, can we talk about that?
Yeah, so when Arya was on her training at the House of Black and White, the first time she saw it, it was like an older guy that came in and he was sitting and Jockin was consoling him and he looked sad, like he was crying. He gave him a drink out of the little fountain and then the guy was gone. He died. That's the gift.
Wow, so to end your suffering.
They drink this black liquid to end their suffering. And that's the peace that the many-faced god offers the followers. And so the followers will take the face and as tribute to the many-faced god. And those faces are also used throughout the show.
Yes.
In different, like you saw when Arya completed her training when she killed Walder Frey.
Mm-hmm.
And she put on the face of his daughter. It's death. And the ability to wear the faces are the gifts. Because, I mean, it would look stupid to just slip a face on your face.
And just go
it's not convincing at all. It's like the most terrible Halloween mask you've ever
LOL.
Seen.
LOL.
But the they can wear the faces and they animate it and they look like the person. That's one of the gifts of the many faced god. Okay, so we talked through the gods of Westeros, and we talked through some of the examples of what it looks like in the show. The High Sparrow was a really interesting element to the show because it showed that religious extremism and what that actually looks like.
Mm-hmm. And how brutal it is.
Yeah. Yeah. How it can be when it goes
very, very brutal.
That left. Yeah. And it also showed the relationship of the faith and the crown.
Mm-hmm.
So they worked together, and Cersei knew that she needed the High Sparrow. I'm sorry, Joffrey knew that he needed the High Sparrow. And they tried to work together, but it just didn't work out because the High Sparrow saw an opportunity to actually take more power than he had.
To usurp power than, yep.
But typically, those relationships work just like
it's a the very Catholic Church used to do dance.
With whoever was in power, whether it was the English power or the power from Spain.
Mm-hmm.
Bran. Okay, so Bran is really unique in this show because as a follower of
he's
kind of
disappointing a little bit. Well, but go ahead.
Yeah, because he doesn't do anything now. Like,
no, I thought that he was somebody that he's not.
Oh, you thought he was the, you thought he was a Night King. Like, I really wanted him to be.
I was
Night
like,
King.
It's him. But okay.
Okay, so what's interesting about Bran is that the gifts that the old guy gives, the Green Sing and the Warging in particular, mm-hmm. Bran has all of the gifts. And so that's really rare. So it's more people are able to warg than Greensea.
Mm-hmm.
Bran, the fact that he can do both and then the fact that he can go forward is that's
exceptional.
Yeah, that has not happened.
But isn't he the three-eyed raven?
He's a three-eyed raven, right?
So
which
is that what makes him exceptional?
Well, I don't know if he was chosen for that purpose or because he trained to do this.
It
wasn't something that he just knew how to do, but the fact that he can do multiple things and do them the way he does them, which is makes it really frustrating that he doesn't do anything in the show anymore. He just is there.
He's just there.
Because
not being the Night King.
If I'm Bran, okay, this is not about religion. If I'm Bran and my brother and possibly my sisters are going off to battle and I don't know if they're coming back, I'm pulling a Hodor on Cersei. And I'm shutting her down and just giving her the suggestion or whatever so we can get this done in a peaceful way. Well, that's not peaceful, but still.
Right. Less
people
are dying. But I'm saving my family. Yeah.
Bran doesn't want to do any of that.
No.
Bran is a three-eyed raven. He's got his job. He's going to be next in the God's woods.
He's in his lane.
Next to that weird wood tree. He's not going to move. He's out there in the cold in the winter in a chair by a tree. And that's his spot. But yeah, Bran is a really interesting person. And the reason why that theory was important to me was mm-hmm. because there was another theory that Bran was also all of the Brands in the history of Westeros. So there's a Bran the Builder. Bran the Builder built the wall.
Okay.
And then there's a Bran Stark. And then there's another Bran. I can't remember. But the Night King theory comes from when Bran went back. He was Green Seeing. And he went back and saw the
somebody.
First man
mm-hmm.
being stabbed with the obsidian dagger, and that created the Night King. And just like he did with Hodor, it was theorized that at one point he greensees back to that moment and wargs into the first man that's on the tree so that he can warn the children of the forest not to do this, but it doesn't work. He still gets stabbed with the dagger, but he gets stuck in the Night King.
Yes.
And then he's also
which
in Bran.
That's
why the fans should write the show at this point, because Weiss and Benioff seem to not care.
It just would have been so good if that was the case. Like, when the Night King was rolling up on him, I was like, yo.
That would have been.
If this dude, like, bends the knee or some crazy stuff, I'm going to be like, oh my God.
That would have been amazing.
It would have. That would have been the best episode.
And then the bolster that
then
theory
it didn't happen.
Was the reason why the Night King actually was able to touch Bran when he was green seeing, because mm-hmm. no one else knows that he's there. But the Night King saw him and actually interacted with him, and he was like, "Oh, that's Bran," because he see himself,
my homeboy.
But we didn't get that.
All right. So we also see Arya's conversion. So Arya is Ned Stark's daughter, mm-hmm. and had been exposed to the old gods, mm-hmm. as well as the faith of the seven.
Right.
But when she went into, what is it, Braavos, yeah. and was in this training process under the many-faced god, I guess her assuming those gifts is looked at as a sort of conversion.
Right, that's a religious conversion.
Okay.
And she's learning the gifts given by the many-faced
god. By the new god that she's following.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So that's the thing. When I'm watching this the first time, because I hadn't read too deep into the books, I'm not catching all of these things. Yeah. I'm just looking like this she's training, but she's changing face at the House of Black and White. And that's why the many-faced god provides her or gifts her with those abilities, because mm-hmm. she is now a follower of that god.
Yep.
All right. The girl has no name, but she has a name now. Yes.
Yes.
First of her name, Killer of the Night King. Leaver of the family, which was so stupid. All right, so.
Don't spoil it for everyone.
Well, no, I'm not spoiling it. I said we were going to talk all the way up to season 8, episode 4.
Yep.
So she was all family, we family, John, and all that stuff. And then as soon as she found out that John is really family, she's gone. Doesn't say goodbye to anybody, just leaves and says to the Hound, I'm not coming back. Nice job, writers.
She throws up the deuces. I don't know. I think it happens in shows where the show is so popular and so multifaceted that you do get to a point where it has to end. And your writers at the end, they need to be closers, honestly. So this isn't going to fall into a whole critique of this situation. We definitely have a couple episodes to go. Mm-hmm. But you can feel this. I personally feel, just as a viewer, as just a regular viewer, that they're compacting a lot of stuff. They're skipping over a lot of things. So this is nothing new, because books that get made into movies, most people complain that the book could go deeper. And it's because the book is not on a time limit. Like, you can have as many pages as you want, mm-hmm. but we're not going to have, 12 seasons of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, but Weiss and Benioff made the decision to have 6 episodes in this last season because they wanted to get to the next project. So this is on them,
yeah.
because they could have had
and
a full season.
And the memes are tearing them up.
As deserved.
Yeah.
Because they could have had a whole season where they drew out some of these storylines. Oh, I'm not going to critique the show because I want this show to be more lasting.
Right. But if this show encourages you to go back mm-hmm. and watch and you feel like previous seasons were a little bit more well developed, it's not just a theory in your mind, because this last season, people who've been watching who are invested are like, what is happening here? So, I mean, it's still a good show, but
it
we
is.
Noticed. Plus, yeah,
it's an amazing show. And this, like I said, this makes me appreciate the show even more. One of the things that's still left out there is the Azor Ahai. Like, who is this person?
Mm-hmm.
We saw that Melisandre thought it was Stannis. She was wrong. And this is, she learned this after sacrificing Shireen, burning that little girl to stake.
Mm-hmm.
And Stannis gets killed. Then she's despondent because she got it all wrong. So Stannis is not the Azor Ahai or the prince that was promised.
Right.
Why do you think they're the same or different? So then they thought, since the Lord of the Light wars against the Great Other, that if the Great Other were the White Walkers, then Arya would be the Azor Ahai. Okay.
Because of what she did. Because
she killed the Great the Great Other with the sword.
Yep.
We don't know. It could be Cersei. It should be the Great Other. And John,
oh, we're not done yet.
And John, yeah, because we're not done.
Mm-hmm.
John could kill her, or someone else could kill her.
Cersei is a handful. Boy.
It could be Daenerys. Daenerys could be the Great Other.
I think Daenerys is devolving into the Mad Queen.
Right. So if Daenerys is strong enough to take everything, and you can't touch her, it doesn't look that way now. But if that's the case, whoever kills Daenerys could be the prince who was promised. And then there's another theory that John is the prince who was promised, because in the Song of Ice and Fire, Rhaegar Targaryen is the fire, and Lyanna Stark, John's mother, is the ice, mm-hmm. and John is the prince. So John could be the prince that was promised, and someone else could be the Azor Ahai. This is a really interesting thing, and I don't know how they're going to end this.
Resolve this in 2 episodes.
And now that you're listening.
But now that I have to read the book.
Well, the book readers don't know, because we're beyond that. So mm-hmm. there's going to be an ending from Weiss and Benioff, and then there's going to be an ending from George R.R. Martin if he ever finishes the series.
Mm.
So we don't know.
Okay.
But in the meantime, you can rewatch all of this greatness and look at it through your religious lens, because it does make it better.
There is something there. Yeah.
It does make it better. So, for Faith Uncut, I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.